Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Everybody's giving me a hard time about the fact that I have not yet dealt with my Christmas tree. It's been laying in the side of the house since late December. I will bet you that this is not an uncommon thing among sports writers who cover college football. You got a bowl game to deal with. You take the tree out. You lay it on the in the backyard somewhere where you're not looking at it. And 5 months later, you're going, ooh, I got to deal with that. Jerry Brewer, Washington Post sports columnist, joining us. Jerry, do you still have your Christmas tree?
Hell no.
Well, I do.
Well, for one, I'm going to be honest. I mean, I've got an artificial tree. Partly too, because we moved, you know, coast to coast and back. So that's just been a little easier to handle. But, you know, in the moments when I haven't had an artificial tree, I've absolutely gotten rid of that thing because it frustrates me just seeing it.
Yep.
It's so hard. It's so hard to put the tree up, to decorate it. When I'm done, I'm done.
I was considering just keeping it because we're approaching Christmas shortly, you know, like might as well put it back up.
Jerry, might as well just celebrate it early this year.
Yeah. Jerry, hey, you just moved. What was it like to move during a pandemic?
Incredibly difficult. We did probably half the move ourselves, and we were moving from a place in which you had to go up 27 steps to access it. So it was high off the street. I tell you what, my Fitbit was going crazy those 2 weeks when we were kind of schlepping up and down that to do it ourselves. And then finally it was approved that movers could be an essential business. So the last little bit they did, it only took them like 2.5 hours to move us. It was ridiculous.
It's nuts that we're, you know, the stuff we're going through. You and I could have sat around and we never would have predicted the way that it has unfolded. Does it surprise you that it appears that college football is on track to start? Or what do you make of, you know, the last 10 weeks and maybe the next 10 weeks in sports?
It doesn't surprise me. It worries me, you know, especially as adamant as something like the SEC, where it matters more. All the links that they've gone through, I mean, they are as business as usual as it gets. I mean, they make the NFL seem like it's being cautious about proceeding forward. We'll see. I mean, you know, one thing we've learned through all of this is that the coronavirus is in charge. And it's fine for you to make plans and have hundreds of contingencies, but we have no idea where we're going to be in July when it's time for them to start training camps. And we definitely have, we don't even have any idea where we're going to be in September when it's time to start playing. The idea of a national college football season to me seems outrageous simply because of the fact that you've got 50 states that are doing it 50 different ways. And how in the world you're going to sync that up to play a national college football season, I have no idea. I do have hopes for a Pac-12 season, an SEC season, a Big Ten season, you know, pure conference play. But, the idea of USC and Alabama playing or Washington and Michigan, just not going to happen.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post, is with us. One of the things that people have been leaning on is documentaries. We saw Joe Exotic and all of that. And, the draft has been entertaining. But The Last Dance for me was a highlight, in part because I forgot how damn good Michael Jordan was. And that's a sin, but I did. I forgot how good he was. I knew he was great, but seeing it again, wow. What were your takeaways, literal and otherwise, when watching that?
How in the world could you forget, John? You've been watching too much Juan Dixon and Sebastian Telfair over the years.
I mean, I knew he was great, but, 20 years passes, kids coming, kids are growing up, and you kind of go, well, Michael Jordan's the greatest. And then you watch it, and you're like, oh, yeah, he was, yeah, it comes into focus again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's amazing how well his game has aged. He seemed like he was just from another planet when we watched him, especially, in the 80s and 90s. And then to review it, all these years later, 22 years since his last title, and to see just how much his game stands up. I thought the argument about what he would be like in today's game was kind of ridiculous for people who had any kind of doubt. I mean, you can clearly see it as you watch the footage. But I was into all the complications of it. Growing up, not being a professional sports writer at that time, you're just enjoying the game for what it is. And it kind of reminds you how wonderful it is to be a kid and just experience
yes.
things. And so it was interesting, even though I knew the history, to live it for 5 weeks and almost feel like it was live. And that was, it redefines to me things about, well, what exactly is sports leadership? How should we view that? Dysfunction. We have this idea that teams that win are harmonious. That was one of the most dysfunctional franchises ever. And I think it was a really bad organization that had some great singular individual talent. So there was just a lot to chew on there.
Episode 7, and you point this out in your column about how, Jordan was a frustrating subject. But in episode 7, when Jordan gets up and says break, and he's getting emotional, I thought that was a pretty authentic moment where it was almost like he was in disbelief about why he would have to explain to other people why he was so demanding and unrelenting with his teammates. Like, hey, you didn't have to do it. And he literally was in disbelief that he was being judged all these years later by it.
Yeah. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. I think that's why we've heard so little of Michael Jordan revisiting his career, a career that kind of speaks for itself over the last 20 years, because he didn't really want to have to delve into his uber competitiveness, his gambling, things like that. Greatness is often very difficult to understand. He had his own interpretation of the game, and he had to learn how to take all of his individual talent and figure out how to make it work in the team dynamic. And he's just this incredible combination of someone who is classically trained by Dean Smith and someone who was just kind of this flamboyant individualist. And how he put all that together with the help of Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause, even though he doesn't want to give him any credit, and Scottie Pippen and everyone who made up that Bulls team was really, really fascinating. But he understands that people just aren't going to get it. And the Michael Jordan, who has become a billionaire off of shoes and other endorsements in particular, that Michael Jordan, we never saw him cussing like a sailor, and we never saw him demeaning people. I think it was really eye-popping for people to experience that and to see what he's really like. He's way more like the guy who gave that petty Hall of Fame speech than he is this creation that Nike, this image that Nike made.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post columnist, is with us. It struck me, too, that, we always talk about athletes that, hey, he was before his time, or this athlete was born too late, or he was born too soon, athletes who didn't get the money. Jordan feels to me like a case of a guy who was right for the time. And I mean that I don't know today if that act holds up with the with other teammates, with coaches, the league, social media. Would that Jordan have been destroyed in today's game?
Well, he would have been a lot more polarizing. And look at the guy who most effectively followed the Jordan blueprint, Jordan. Kobe Bryant, and how his career was viewed. There was a lot of polarity to Kobe that just wasn't quite there with Michael Jordan, perhaps because we just, you know, we didn't have social media and we couldn't hear the negative things that people were saying in addition to the positive things. But I think that his, you know, Kobe was incredibly probed for his selfishness. You know, his acts of when he was a bad teammate, you know, those things were explored. I think it's similar. I think Michael Jordan would have been awfully similar. His lows. You know, Jordan is interesting because Kobe peaked, or Kobe started winning championships when he was 21, 22 years old, early in his career. And his struggles came in the middle of his career, kind of the post-Shaq and Kobe era. And then he got back on top before he got injured and old. Jordan had all his struggles early, and then once he figured out the formula, it was game over for everyone else. Yeah. And so it just, you know, the arc of his career just seems just so incredible when you put it all together, where I think today everything would have been laid out in perhaps a more objective manner. I think the bottom line is it's harder to deify athletes today. First of all, they should have never been deified in the first place, the human being. But it's harder to deify, it's harder to lionize people than it's ever been before. And if Jordan came in this era, all of his bad would have been presented almost as equally as his good.
I could hear sort of the gears behind the scenes turning because I'm watching this documentary, and clearly it's a documentary. Most documentaries do have a slant, and it was Jordan's story, and the footage was remarkable. I think it's the best thing I've seen in a while. But I could hear, like, Team LeBron going, okay, when we're done, let's make sure we have all this footage. Are we just going to see a series of documentaries as these players were, you know, sort of their arc of their careers, and everyone's going to get to make their case to being the greatest of all time?
Dwayne Wade's working on one, right? And he made sure, kind of from that free agent class of 2000 on, that he documented everything, and we'll see what he comes up with. Clearly, LeBron is in the business of storytelling. So he's already started to tell his story and try to frame the argument of his greatness. I think the biggest thing is Jordan took back his greatness over those 5 weeks. And, you know, yes, he's complicated. And I think the story was ultimately a lot sadder than maybe people who got caught up in some of the details and some of the dramatic, fantastic moments. I think it was a lot sadder. But he took back control of the narrative. And we are in this era in which athletes understand narrative more than they ever have. And they want to contribute to the telling of their story more than ever. So I think this way of doing things is here to stay. And then, John, the question becomes, you know, 20 years from now, if LeBron is telling his story almost in real time, are we going to be able to go back and have some great LeBron documentary? Are we going to be able to come back and have some great Tom Brady documentary, some great Serena Williams documentary? Some great Tiger Woods documentary. Maybe with Tiger, because his life is a lot more hidden. But with a lot of the others, I don't think it's going to be as dramatic, because all Jordan really cared about, everything was about how dominant he was at the game. And all the other stuff just kind of happened as it happened, and he developed a business savvy. Everyone is more intentional in what they do now. And in a lot of ways, as fun as it is to experience in real time, I think it's going to doctor history a little bit, and it's going to be weird to look back on these people who, for lack of a better word, are overexposed.
I love that take, and I think you're right, because one of the things that struck me, and look, my wife's made documentaries, she's been involved, she knows how that works. She was sitting there watching it through the lens of somebody who would be telling a story, and she was saying, "I can't believe they have this footage, and nobody's seen it, and it's been 20 years." And you're right, we see so much of everything now, and it's just too much. Jerry Brewer is with us, columnist at the Washington Post. You wrote recently about the NFL and its desire to make hiring minority with incentivized with draft picks. Where is the NFL on this? And are draft picks the right way to go, Jerry?
I don't think draft picks are the right way to go. I think a lot of the things that they did in enhancing the Rooney Rule, now you're going to have to interview twice as many minority candidates. You look at things that they've done with the fellowship program and making that mandatory for all 32 teams. The mobility factor, meaning that these selfish coaches and general managers aren't going to be able to block their assistants and their assistant executives from pursuing jobs that are clear steps forward. I think all of that is going to be helpful, not just for black coaches, but I think for minority coaches, but I think for all coaches. Now that there is this feeling if you want a job, you can go out there and get it, and we're gonna keep everyone from turning your talent into a way to have gamesmanship. I think that's all good. But they still seem pretty adamant about wanting to have a little carrot on top, a little carrot to dangle of an incentive. I think that the draft idea, even though they won't admit it, it was not good. It was terrible. But I just kind of wonder, is there something a little more sophisticated that they could figure out? I think now they have this new way to measure franchises and what they're doing in terms of diversity. So I think there's a good chance that they might be able to create their own report card, and maybe you could reward franchises on what they're doing overall. Not just did you hire a black coach, were you in a position to hire a black coach, were you in a position to hire a minority executive? So I think there's a chance that they might be able to develop certain criteria and tie that to some kind of reward. I don't like the idea of draft pick or moving up in the draft. I'm wondering if maybe there's something you could do with a salary cap exception or cap money that rolls over. Yes. That might be appealing to certain franchises. I also think we're headed down this road in which, coaches are going to say, you're allowing people to have more eyeballs and move and poach our good assistant coaches. If I'm the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick and other franchises, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Seattle, you're going to look at it and say, well, we're about to supply the whole league with our coaches, head coaches and coordinators. You need to compensate us for this. So I think at some point the ability to poach a coach is going to go into compensatory pick consideration. And that's something the NFL already does if you lose a free agent. I think in their rubric, that complicated way that they decide if you deserve a compensatory pick, I believe that coaches lost, not just minority coaches, but coaches lost because of this increased mobility. Executives lost because of this increased mobility is going to factor into that. And I think that that's a lot more nuanced, and I don't think it's going to enrage people quite as much as, you hire a minority coach, you get to move up 6 spots. You hire both at your top 2 positions, you get to move up 16 spots. It's got to be something that's more holistic and nuanced, and I think that's where they're going to end up.
I like the idea of a report card or almost like the APR in college sports with grades. It incentivizes, hey, if you're doing the right things, if you have a healthy organization, then you get a favorable grade. And I think that's more, I think that's fairer to everybody involved, right? I would not want to be a GM or a coach and go, look, I got hired because they could get an extra pick.
You're penalizing stability there. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't going to apply to that because Mike Tomlin has done a terrific job. They're a stable franchise. Seattle, Baltimore, New England. You're going to penalize the New England Patriots because Bill Belichick is the best coach in the league and he's not going anywhere. So it has to be a system that all 32 teams have access to. You can't make it a competitive advantage. And that was incredibly frustrating a lot of people around the league.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post. Thank you for making time. You're the best, man. Appreciate you.
Anytime, man.
There he is, Jerry Brewer from his new house. He moved, you know? He decided that's an ultimate flex. All right, coronavirus, I'm going to move during this pandemic. I still got to get rid of my Christmas tree. Leave it here. You got the BFT. The Big Splash is next. Two things happened 40 years ago. I'll share both of those big pop culture things in the 1 o'clock hour. Rob Mullins, the Oregon Athletic Director, joining us at 2 o'clock. But before all of that, I want to talk about the Big Splash. It's the one thing you need to know today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
But we...
The Big Splash! Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
The SEC announced a plan this morning that allows weight rooms to open for football players on June the 8th. The Pac-12 might do the same, or it might be a week behind. But it's become clear that not every Pac-12 university will do the same thing. Pac-12 presidents are supposed to vote next week, per John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News, on allowing student athletes back on campus. Most likely the presidents are going to allow that in phases, but what you should expect are Utah, Colorado, Arizona getting back to campus probably before some of the others. Where will Oregon fall? That could be up to Governor Kate Brown. Keep an eye on that, and that's the one thing that you need to know, and we do that every day on the program.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.